up. Who is our celebrant this month?
Thanks, Kevin. Mark, alcoholic. I got sober on December 23rd, 2013. Couldn't make it quite until New Year's, so here we are. This is my home group, and it has been the whole time I've been sober. A couple of guys that this was their home group met me in my first meeting. They grabbed me, brought me here the next week, and they showed me what it was about. But the guy I asked to speak for me tonight is Bill, and Bill was my grand sponsor for a long time. And when I was a crazy new guy who was just like really worried all the time and full of fear and afraid of everything, Bill would like hang out with me, go to meetings with me, make me laugh, but also like, you know, show me the way. And I've always appreciated that. So with that, I'm going to shut up and give you Bill.
I'm on the internet again. Oh, my name's Bill. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, everybody. Just sitting here. I don't know what the hell I'm going to talk about. It's AA, so I'll be talking about alcohol probably. But I am an alcoholic, and I'm just blown away that Mark has 10 years. Before I came down here, I was thinking about it. I was like, how long have I known Mark? And then I was like, well, if he's got 10 years, I must know him 10 years. So, yeah, I was just always impressed. He looked like an accountant. I found out he did prison time. I was impressed. But anyway, congratulations. You know, I've been a pleasure watching Mark, you know, and getting to know him all these years. And just, I mean, he's a good dude. Anybody knows. I mean, Mark's a stand-up guy. But, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. It's funny. I love this group because... it's just so funny. I mean, you would not believe how much work I put into not being a part of this group. When I moved to Florida, I was sober 14 years. I moved here in 1999. I was supposed to be here 1 year. That was the agreement. I've been here since 99. And I met this kid that looked like he was 13 years old, and his name was Jaime. And he... worked at Nordstrom's. I guess he was a manager. So he was always wearing like a three-piece suit. Like, and it was like, he looked like he was 12. And then there was this other guy named Todd. And I thought Todd was like special ed, you know. But these guys were just, I'd run into them all these meetings. And, you know, and they were like 20 years old. And they were like super active. And they found out that I got sober when I was, 18, 19. And they were like, you got to come to our young people's meeting. And I was like, dude, I'm like, young people's is for like, 16 to 20, you know what I mean? I was like, I'm 34 years old. I'm not going to freaking your YPG, whatever. And anyway, they just kept bugging the shit out of me. And then they wanted me to speak, and I'm a whore for that. So, you know, they're like, yeah, I'll come to your meeting and talk or whatever. And, you know, I just had so much fun, hanging out with these guys. And it was so funny because I would, you know, they'd be like, come on, man, we're going to go hang out. We're going swimming or whatever. And I had this job that I knew I was going to get fired from. It's been 24 years. I'm still waiting to get fired. But anyway, I had this job, and I'd be like, no, man, I got to work in the morning. I can't go hang out with you guys. Like, you know, I got to be responsible or whatever. And I'd go home, and I'd be sitting up at like 11 o'clock. I was like, you're going to be sitting here wondering, you know, just freaking out. Because, I mean, it was just such a, I mean, if you've ever been sober and moved to another part of the country, it's such, we hate ourselves. That's all there is to it, you know. And, I mean, I would not, anything that was different, I'm like, they're doing it wrong. Like, I'm not doing that. Like, this sucks, you know, whatever. But anyway, they saved me, you know. The whole thing of moving to Florida, I've never been involved in so many people's lives. I mean, so many new people, because it's kind of a mecca of treatment here. Apparently, people with money send their kids down here to get sober. I guess it messes up elections or something. I don't know. They're like, do you want to go to treatment in Indiana? No. Do you want to go to Tampa? Okay, I'll go. You know, yeah, I mean, I just have so many memories. I mean, I'm looking around the room. I'm looking at all these people that, like, I would bet money would not stay sober, and they're here sober, doing pretty well. But I just feel blessed, you know, to have experienced it, to see all these things. And, you know, for every person that I've seen get sober and stay sober, I'd say I've seen 100 die, you know, or just worse than death, just, you know, die by a million paper cuts pretty much, or you know. But... So, my sobriety date's May 25th, 1985. I turned myself into AA at that young age, which I thought was really unfair. And I thought I was being screwed out of the best years of my life. And the truth is, because thanks to AA, I've got to have my 20s and 30s and 40s, et cetera. So, because I mean, I was a guy, I didn't think I was going to see 27. I mean, I'd read stuff about Jim Morrison and stuff, like, hell yeah, that's what's going to happen to me, you know, Jimi Hendrix, whatever. But it wasn't looking like I was going to make 19, really. I mean, I would have alcohol poisoning all the time. I huff glue. I've smoked every spice in the cabinet. I have freaking... Anything you tell me to try to get high, I would do. I would take action, which is, I always mention this because it's interesting to me. I'd come to AA and people would suggest actions to get sober, and I did not try any experiments with that. You know what I mean? I would not try anything as far as getting sober. So, I started, and I mean, I was mad. I mean, I started drinking at 14 and I'm in AA at 18. I mean, that's not fair. So, I grew up in a little town called Loveland, Ohio. I mean, it's picturesque. I mean, it looks like a postcard or something. I hated it. You know, we had horse. We lived on like 7 acres. There's like a lake. When you look up my mom's front porch, there's like horses there grazing. You know what I mean? I hated it. You know, I wanted to like live in the projects or something. I mean, I didn't know. I mean, I just wanted to be like what I saw on TV. I wanted to live in LA or something like that, New York City. I mean, I was like that before I ever had a drink. I just was not comfortable in my own skin. I was always just plagued with anxiety. And I think there was a lot of trauma when I was a kid, and I think that probably played something to do with it. But I mean, it doesn't make you alcoholic, because my brother grew up in the same house. You know, and I'm going to, a big thing I want to talk about tonight is sponsorship. I think sponsorship's really important. I'm going to probably bounce around. I huffed a lot of glue when I was a kid. But, you know, I remember I was trying to tell my sponsor, like, in the beginning, like, the trauma, you know what I mean? I just need, you know, my mom's such a mess. This is why, you know, I do drugs and I'm alcoholic and all this stuff. And my sponsor would be like, yeah, but you got a brother, right? I'm like, yeah, what about him? You know, and he's like, well, he grew up in the same house, right? Yeah. He's like, does he have DUIs? You know what I mean? Is he going to jail? And I'd be like, no. Like, and I just thought he was a prick. You know what I mean? When he'd say stuff, I'd be like... This has nothing to do with my brother, but I mean, he would get me with that kind of stuff. He would, you know, he'd make me answer it. That was the worst part. He'd make me answer. He wouldn't tell me, because if he would have told me, I would have just flipped him off and left. But he would make me answer, you know what I mean? He'd ask me questions. So I started drinking at 14. My first drink was Carlo Rossi. I'm missing Amanda Rossi. That's what it is. Anyway, Carlo Rossi, that was my first drink, you know, and I just remember this kid, he's like, do you drink? And I was like, yeah. And I mean, I didn't drink. And I just remember, you know, I'm a kid. I'm 14. I like high C Hawaiian Punch. I hit that Carlo Rossi. It did not taste like Hawaiian Punch, you know. And I mean, just, man, you know, dry. But I drank it, you know, and I got some down. And the main thing I remember is just smiling, you know, the effect produced by alcohol. It comes at once by taking a few drinks. And I mean, once I felt that, man, all bets were off. I mean, I had met Jesus, you know. It was just, I mean, the light had shined into my heart or whatever. I mean, I just thought, I'm going to do this every chance I get. You know, I'm a very indecisive person, but when I had that first drink, I was sure of that. You know what I mean? So that's what I was going to do. And I mean, I went from the kid that's never going to smoke, never going to drink, you know, I saw the picture of the lung, you know, showed my mom, whatever, that kind of kid. I'm smoking cigarettes, I think, that night, you know, not inhaling, of course, but I'm smoking cigarettes and drinking. And like 2 days later, I catch my friend smoking pot. You would have thought he was mainlining PCP or something. I mean, or, you know, heroin. I mean, I got back like 40 feet just to be safe, you know, because I didn't want to get a buzz or whatever. And then, you know, the next day I'm smoking pot. And, you know, and then everything would be the list of what you're not going to do until you get the chance to do it. You know, like, I would never do that. And then as soon as I get the opportunity, I would do it. And I remember acid. I saw a documentary on LSD when I was about 14. It scared the shit out of me. People having bad trips. They showed them in the psych ward, like, in a straitjacket, you know. And I was like, I would never take that stuff. About a week later, my cousin had some microdot. They look like pop rocks, you know. Anyway, so I eat one. I'm like, these ain't real. He's like, take another one. So, you know, alcoholics, we're impatient. So, you know what I mean? I take one like every 14 minutes or something. Anyway, I ate about eight of them. after about the eighth one, they were real. And I just remember, you know, seeing the tracers and stuff. And then I'd be laughing 1 minute. Then I'd be like, I'm going to be retarded. You know what I mean? And I'd be like crying. Then I'd be happy again. And then I'd be worried about my brain. And then I'd be happy. And, you know, it wore off eventually, about 16 hours or something. But and I prayed a lot that night. I remember I was like, God, please just don't let me be retarded after this. And, you know, but again, none of that would ever stop me. But it's weird. When I look back, alcohol, though, was the thing that no matter what the problem was, you know, you get a few drinks and you start, I can think. Or it seems like I can think, at least. I can think, like, with one voice instead of the multitude that's usually in my head. And, you know, I just would think, this is what I'm going to do. I mean, it would never be followed up with any action or anything would happen, but I mean, it would sound good. You know, while you're there kind of drunk, I'd be like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to go to college or whatever it is, you know. And the other thing is, like, I think within the third or fourth time I drank, I had a blackout, and I didn't get to find out what that was until I got to AA. Thank God they used to talk about it. I hardly ever, you hear a little bit, but I just thought it was time travel, you know. I mean, I just knew that 1 minute I was with friendly people, and then the next minute I was with people that weren't happy that I was in their yard or their basement or whatever. There's some chairs over there. You guys can see some chairs. But, you know, it was just, it was crazy. But I made my first blackout, I think I was 14 years old, and my, so my friend Jeff, and I found Mom's Valiums and had some Rolling Rock. Anyway, it's like dusk, and we're going to leave. We're going to go to his house, because I like going to his house, because his parents were alcoholics, and he would put them to bed, which I thought was really cool. They would get really wasted, and he'd be like, Mom, you're drunk. Go to bed. And she'd go. She'd go to bed. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't order my mom around for nothing. You know, she'd beat me. But he'd put his parents to bed, and then we'd steal their liquor, you know. And anyway, so I wake up, and he's gone, and I'm like, where'd he go? You know, and so I go up to get my Cheerios or whatever. My mom looks like hell, and I don't know if she's been fighting with a drunk all night, but she was just like, what were you on last night? I'm like, what is she talking about? You know what I mean? She starts telling me what I did. And I think she's making all this up, you know. And the highlight of the night was I tried to urinate behind the speakers in the living room and in front of the whole family or whatever, you know. And I'm just like, she's just saying this to scare me. You know what I mean? Why would I do some stupid stuff like that? And the sad thing is that every time I drank, it's pretty much what it's like. It's pretty much a replay of the same episode of a bad TV show or whatever. But I mean, I usually end up using the restroom where there's not a restroom with an audience. And, you know, I'm begging people that I don't know to beat the hell out of me. So that's just how the camera's here. That's just how I am when I drink. But, you know, I remember whatever. I was scared she'd tell my dad and he'd beat me or whatever. So, I told her, like, I'd learned my lesson or I don't know. But I just, you know, nothing changed. I mean, I just drank more, and it progressed fast. The other thing I did, I'm kind of one of the last, is I started hitching. This was Uber back then. You just stuck your thumb out, and if you've watched any of these serial killer shows, I was just out there just trying to get killed, you know. I'd be out there hitchhiking, and all kinds of strange people pick you up. I mean, sometimes some cool people from the 60s pick you up, mostly, you know, I had one guy try to get me to help him rob a gas station. That was interesting. But he's like, you're a kid, you won't do any time, I just need a lookout. You know, I was like, dude, I just want to get to the apartment complex, you know. But that's the kind of stuff that would happen. And I would just keep thinking that I was going to learn how to drink, you know what I mean? And that I would, you know, like an adult, I wouldn't be a sloppy mess, you know. Because I kept blacking out. And what I would do, back then we didn't have cell phones or GPS or anything. So what you would do is you would have to do, you just call the last face you remember seeing. So you call them up, you'd be like, hey, man, that's pretty crazy last night, you know. And they always have that disgusted tone of voice. And they're like, you don't remember what happened, do you? And you're just like, what's your problem, you know. And they're just like, don't go to Tom's house, you know. And you're like, why not? They're like, you don't want to know, you know. And then they tell you stuff that's just so bizarre. You're like, come on, why would I do that? They're like, you did it, you know. Like, and it, you know, and it's nothing you want to hear, or like, it's just, and it just, like it says in the book, you know, what does it say? It's like he vaguely, whatever, he worries that someone observed him or whatever, and I was always observed, but, you know, and it makes for more drinking, you know, in the double life, and you try to act like you're this person when really, you know what you are. So I was hitchhiking all the time, and that sucked. People throw bottles at you and fireworks and stuff, and it's just cold and rainy, and you know. So I just kept thinking, man, once I get a car, everything's going to be awesome, you know. And I always think of this story. My sponsor would always say that, you know, alcoholics are event-oriented. And I thought once I got a car, I'd get a car, and then I'll get a job, and I'll get a girlfriend, and it'll be great. You know, I guess I thought they'd all be in the trunk of the car. But I got a car, and I got a DUI. That's what happened. You know, I got a car, I got a DUI almost immediately. And it's funny, my nephew's getting his, like, learner's permits. And I was thinking, I'd have my, whatever, your temps, where you're supposed to ride with, like, an experienced driver. I'd be drunk with my temps by myself, you know, drinking 40s. And and thinking the whole time, like, this is not good, you know. But you know how that is. You're like, oh, well. So first DUI, 17 years old. You guys are too young. Some of you know. Plastidils, they were muscle relaxers. Anyway, I'm on Plastidils. I'm drinking Colt 45. I'm high as a kite. And I wanted to give me a beef and cheddar. So I'm coming out of the Arby's. And I cut off a state trooper. So the state trooper gets me. And back then, they carried them big 357 Magnums. I just remember he had that hand on the 357, that big black flashlight they like to hit you in the head with. You know, and he's there. And he's like, are you feeling okay? And I'm like, feeling okay? Like, what's he talking about? And he's like, well, do you know why I'm pulling you over? You know what I mean? And I'm like, what is with the quiz, you know? And I'm like, no, man. Like, I'm like, I live like two exits down. Like, be cool to me kind of thing, you know? And he's like, and the other dumb thing, I shoved the whole sandwich in my face thinking that's going to, like, you know, hide the alcohol or whatever. So I just imagine I probably had cheese and roast beef. I'm probably spitting it on the state trooper, you know? And he was like, well, you know, I had to slam on my brake. You completely cut me off, and I had to slam on my brakes to prevent us having an accident. I'm like, duh, that's why you have brakes. Like, you know, like, I'm like, who's getting murdered right now because you're hassling me, you know? I mean, that was my attitude. And of course, he had me get out of the car, field sobriety test, the muscle relaxers. I did a pretty good rubber man walk, so it was a pretty quick field sobriety test. And, you know, DUI number one. But the important thing of that story for me, being an alcoholic, is when you'd see me hitchhiking, which you would, and we didn't have Bluetooth back then, so you knew I was talking to myself, you'd see me going, man, I'd be smoking cigarettes, angrily going, if you wouldn't have stopped at Arby's, you'd be in a car with heat right now. You know what I mean? But you went to freaking Arby's, you idiot. So I didn't go to Arby's for like 15 years. And you won't believe this. I got another DUI. And I wasn't at Arby's, you know? It was like a year later. But so I lost my license, and I got to find out how much my friends enjoy my company. Like, I'd be calling people up, begging them to pick me up, and no one would come pick me up. Because I'm the kind of guy, I show up with like $2 and change. I'm going to drink a lot more than that. And I like to start fights. I'm that guy that, like, yells at the car. I don't fight. I just start fights. You know what I mean? I yell at people that I don't know, you know, and mouth off. But I'd surround myself with guys that would, you know, I don't know. I don't know if they felt sorry for me or what, but they'd be mad about it, but they would keep me from getting killed, you know, kind of thing. So that would go on. And I was that guy who wasn't allowed to get out of the car. Like in high school, when you go places, they punch you a few times. They say, keep your mouth shut. You stay in the car. And I'd be so hurt about it, you know, like, God, why is everybody so uncool? You know, I mean, things just kept going on. And I was having a lot of NDEs. You know, near-death experiences. I would have them all the time. I'd like to do interesting things. Like, I'd lock myself in my room with all the lights off, and I like to lift weights and do bong hits. You know, and I get the bar stuck on my neck, and I'd be looking at the lava lamp, and I'd be thinking, this is how it's all gonna end. You know, then finally I'd throw the weights off or whatever. And I didn't do that once. I did that I don't know how many times, you know. And every time I think, man, don't do that next time. But I would do it. And I remember one time I caught my room on fire. I'd heard about these flaming shots, but I didn't know how to do them. So I tried to do this flaming shot, and I kind of, I guess, wussed out halfway through and blew like blew fire all over the, caught the drapes on fire. And I remember I'm drunk and, like, you know, I'm like 16 or something. I'm like, you know, you can't call for help because you're not supposed to be drinking in your room. And, you know, it's just be bad. But, so I'm lucky to be here. But, sorry, I put some things down. Okay, so so now I'm like 17, almost 18, and I was not excited about turning 18. I don't know if any of you can relate to this, but I wanted to go back. Like at 17, I wanted to go back to 14, you know what I mean? It's like there's a lot of stress and pressure, people wanting you to work, and are you going to go to college? What are you planning to do? And I'm like, I just want to get high in the woods, you know what I mean? Like, I just want to drink. I don't want to, you know, I like being a juvenile, you know what I mean? It's like, because when you get arrested, your mom goes to court, really. You're just kind of hanging out there, you know? They're reading the stuff to your mom, you know? I like that. But you know, I remember my friends being like, what are you going to do when you turn 18? And we were, you know, it was my 18th birthday, and I'm drinking a beer, and I remember thinking, I said, well, I imagine I'll be going to jail soon. And they're just like, dude, why are you so negative? Like, you know, and, I mean, I knew what was coming, you know. So I turned 18, and, you know, there was just more weird stuff that happened. Like, I gotta get my eyes out. My mom, I didn't have glasses when I got here either, but my mom, you know, she would always be talking to my dad, and like, just, I just thought she was dramatic. She'd be like, he's been in his room for like 2 days. He hasn't left. Like, I mean, depending on what kind of goodies I had, I mean, I got a hold of a lot of Demerol for a while. I thought my life was getting better because I was only conscious like a couple times a week. You know what I mean? So I'd be like, oh, it's Thursday. Cool. You know, this hasn't been that rough of a week, you know, because there wasn't much sobriety in there. But, and I just, you know, she'd tell my dad. And anyway, I turned 18, and I don't know why, but my dad wanted to help me get my license, which made no sense, you know. And we had this family meeting, and my mom's like, he's going to kill somebody. Because, you know, he traveled. And, you know, you play them, when your parents are divorced, you play them against one another, you know what I mean, to get money and things like that and, you know, get out of trouble. So with, she would find me, you know, I would wake her up trying to get in the house. Like, I'd have a key, but I'd make so much noise trying to get in the house. Finally, she'd open the door. You're wasted, aren't you? And I'd be like, no, I'm not drunk, you know, or whatever. And then other times, it would be like below zero, and I remember I'd just sit on the porch, and I'd just be like smoking cigarettes, like, I just don't want to listen to this shit. I got a good buzz going, you know what I mean? And I'm lucky I didn't freeze to death. But I would just sit out there and smoke, you know? So he helped me get my license, and he's like, just promise me you'll call me. He said, I don't care if you drink. He said, I won't bitch at you. He said, I'll get you a taxi or I'll come get you. And I mean, I was like in tears. I was like, I love you, Dad. You know, I'm like flipping Mom off under the table, you know? And so I went out that night and got a DUI. You know, and I got guys with me that live by me. They're begging me, you know, don't drive, don't drive. And, you know, it was one of those nights. I mean, I just discovered the beer bong recently, and it is not good for alcoholics. So, you know, anyway, I was doing the beer bongs, and I'd stolen my sister's piggy bank. I had a bunch of change, like $5 of change, about all these 40s of just nasty beer. And I just remember, I can remember my stomach was like sloshing when I walked, and I would like hit the wall. Like if I go through a door, I'd hit both sides. And then, you know, my friends are like, dude, don't drive, don't drive. Anyway, flip my car, DUI. And my first DUI, a guy in the drunk tank told me to put a penny under my tongue, and I beat the DUI. So apparently when my mom got there, I don't remember this. My mom got there, I tried to get there with a tow truck before the cops got there, and I had a bunch of change in my mouth. Like, she said, you could hear it, like the change. I said, don't worry, Mom, I got this DUI beat. Like, and my mom said, she was like, my son is retarded. So anyway, the state boy came, and I remember my buddy Elbow, and he's like, be cool. And like, I couldn't stand, you know what I mean? It was that kind of deal. So I'm telling the cop that like the road's wet. It's not, we're in a drought. And I said the road was wet, and that's why I lost control or whatever. And I remember my head kept hitting the window like loud, you know, like boom. And I'd be like, cause you know, you always tell them what, two beers, you know? Anyway, DUI, my best friend is in a place called the Care Unit of Cincinnati, and it's like a treatment center, 28 day. First I'd ever heard of such a thing. And he'd call me and I'd make fun of him, you know? He'd be like, dude, I think we got a problem. I'm like, no, you got a problem. You're in that treatment center. You know, and I'd do a bong hit on the phone or something so he could hear it to support him. But, you know, so I wasn't really worried until my friends were telling me that I was looking at going to this place. It was called the Workhouse. And it was like real jail, you know what I mean? It was built during the Civil War and stuff. It didn't sound good, you know? And I was like, man, he goes, dude, there's girls in here. And he's like, they got chocolate milk on tap. And I was like, it don't sound too bad. So I just seen One Flew the Cuckoo's Nest. So I thought, you know, I'll do like Jack Nicholson did. Like he pretended he was crazy. I'll pretend I got a problem with alcohol. You know, so I went in there. And I remember the other thing that really helped me is I was trying to be, you know, get a positive spin on it. And I thought, just think if I don't do any drugs or drink for 28 days. Just think how wasted I'll get when I get out. You know what I mean? I thought that'll be amazing. Plus, I was all, you know, how we're always worried about our health. You know what I mean? We'll put any kind of garbage in us, but we're like, oh, you know, I need to eat, you know, be careful or whatever. So I went in there, and I'll never forget. It was just scary, man, because they had like rubber furniture. you know what I mean, like psych ward furniture with the round edges, and they were doing like big time wrestling. They're like body slamming each other and stuff, and I was like, what? And the other thing, it was totally on the other side of town. I mean, I hitchhiked, but not too far. So like when we drove over there, I was like, I don't even know how to hitchhike home from this place. Like, what if it sucks, you know? I mean, so I went in there, and the first alcoholic that I really met, the guy was like 70. He was like a volunteer. I mean, he looked like an alcoholic, you know. I looked pretty good when I was 18. So anyway, this guy, and he's talking to me, and he was telling me that he's an alcoholic, and they're like searching your stuff, you know, and going through your belongings. I'm just like weird about, like, and everybody's shaking hands and saying, I'm an alcoholic. I would just be like, ooh, like, you know, like wipe your hand up, like, I don't want to catch that or whatever. I mean, I just thought that was so weird, everybody saying, I'm a drug addict. You know, I'd be like, I'm not. You know what I mean? That's all I'd be thinking the whole time. I'm not. I'm just here for, you know, court. And the guy told me, he said, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. And he said that he would shake so bad that in the morning when he tried to drink a quart of beer, he'd chip his teeth. And he would, so what he'd do is he'd plug up the bathroom sink and he'd pour the beer in the sink and lap it up like a dog. And then once he got like a quart down, he could drink. And I'll never forget, I thought I was psychotic at this time because I'd always get in trouble because I was just so like shut down and stuff, and I'd say such inappropriate things to people, I'd get in a lot of trouble, and I'd have no clue, you know. I was often told how selfish I was and things like that, but I remember feeling for that guy. I was like, man, that would be terrible to not be able to drink like that. Maybe because I'm an alcoholic, you know what I mean? I didn't know that then. I realized that like years later, but I'll never forget that. And then that day I went to my first AA meeting. It was and it was in the basement of the hospital. It was a meeting about this size. And man, they smoked. And the guy's name was Bill. He was sober 30 years. I just thought it sounded horrible. You know what I mean? I was like, 30 years in AA? That just sounded like doing, you know, 20 years in solitary confinement, you know, or something. I mean, I didn't think anything was good about it. The only thing I thought positive about his talk is he said the only hopeless case was 24 empty bottles. And the other thing he said was that Vicks inhalers had Benzedrine in them. And you could break them open and chew on the Benzedrine and speed off it. That's all I thought about the rest of the meeting. Because there was a Walgreens across the street. Like, I look out the window, well, you know, I thought, remember they used to put in the fishbowl? I thought, man, if I could just get out to that Walgreens and get me a Benzedrine, I won't be sober and I'll feel better. But I asked him, you know, he's like, any questions? I'm like, they still put the Benzedrine? He's like, no, kid, they don't do that anymore. And that's all I would get out of AA. I'm like, these people know stuff, but you should listen. So I wasn't interested in getting sober. I was interested in the other stuff. Plus, they would talk about the way they drank and stuff, and I just wanted to party with them. I was like, so they don't drink at all? Like, you know, I feel like I could hang with these people. They wouldn't judge me, you know? But I got out of there, did the 28 days, got high while I was in there, got out, you know, went to court. My attorney said, isn't it commendable that young Williams going to Alcoholics Anonymous? You know, it was like a big deal, I guess, in the 80s. And Mothers Against Drunk Driving was just picking up steam. And you know, I didn't go to jail. So AA worked as far as I was concerned. And I lost my license for like 2 years. And I mean, they had a big young people's meeting. There was a meeting in Cincinnati at that time called Monday Night Young People's. And it was like 400 people. I mean, it was a trip. And it looked attractive, you know. But you know how it is when you're kind of got a toe in AA. You're like, yeah, being sober would be cool, but I'm going to keep drinking, you know. But like, if it gets bad, you know, I'll go. Like the cartoons where somebody falls down at the last minute, they jump out of the whatever, the elevator or something, and they're fine. That's what I thought I was going to do. So I would go to aftercare, and I'd be like, yeah, I've been relapsing a lot. And they're like, no, you're using. And then I got mad, never went back, you know. So I never went back. And then I remember thinking, like, well, how can I get in trouble? I don't have my driver's license. You know, I mean, I don't rob people. Well, 6 months later, I had a robbery charge. It turns out I do rob people. And I robbed some guy I met in treatment. And I'll never forget it. It was just insane. I remember my mom, just her face, and these police with guns out. And my brother's like, why are all the police here? And all this stuff, it was just crazy, you know? And he kept saying, you hit the big time, punk, you're going to prison. And I was like, they're just trying to scare me, you know? And then my friends that were more, you know, that had been locked up like their whole lives, they're like, dude, you're going to prison, that's violent crime or whatever. And I got an attorney, and he said I was going to prison. So all of a sudden, I became an alcoholic again. I don't know if this has ever happened to you. I said, no, I have a disease. I need treatment. And then I lied. You know, I was like, I was in a blackout. I don't remember anything. I just started lying heavily. And Anyway, I'm back in the same treatment center, which sucks. If you've ever had to do the double treatment, it's so fun to go to treatment right after you got out. And like everything they told you happened, you're like, oh, it's way worse, isn't it? And you're just like, F you, you know. And the meet and greet, you know, the volunteers are all coming in. They're like, hey, weren't you just in here? You know, I hated it. But, you know, I mean, I still didn't think I was an alcoholic. I just thought it was just total bullshit, you know, that I was, you know, injustice or whatever. So I just did whatever they said, man. I read the big book like it was some kind of voodoo Harry Potter shit, you know. I mean, I would just read it. It didn't make any sense, but I'm like, I better read this shit or God's going to kill me, you know. Just, I mean, you know, and my prayer would just be like, God, just please don't send my dumb ass to prison. Like, I know I deserve to go. Because that was my big thing. It wasn't like I felt like I didn't deserve to go. I knew I deserved to go, you know what I mean? And I was like, God, how am I going to get out of this? And I mean, not once did I think I was an alcoholic. I just thought, you know, God knows that the only thing I care about is drinking. And, you know, and then the only thing I'm scared of is going to prison. So, like, this is, like, what he's doing to me. That was my conception of God before I came here. So, I you know, just to give you a break on the God thing, if that bothers you. But that's where I was with I believed in God, but I just believed he was there to just punish me, you know, kind of thing. And I believed that he wasn't going to help me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's way too late to ask now kind of thing. So, but I did. I mean, I tried, and I went to the groups, and I listened. And I got up the levels to where they put us on the druggy buggy and take us to meetings. And thank God, in Cincinnati, it was speaker meetings everywhere. And they were just hilarious. And I'd be so mad because I hated being in AA. I hated being sober. And then I'd be laughing in a meeting. You know what I mean? I'd catch myself laughing. I'd be like, wait a minute, we're sober. This sucks, you know? Like, don't laugh. You know what I mean? I'm not joining your cult. And we had to wear, back then, we had to wear these orange hospital bands. So everybody at AA knew you were fresh meat. When you came in, you know, it was like they were throwing the chum, you know, in the ocean or whatever. And they'd be all around, you know, asking you personal questions like, how long have you been sober? Do you have a sponsor? You know, all that kind of stuff. And I went to this meeting, young people's meeting. It was called Friday Night Live. It's in Oakley in Cincinnati. And that's where I heard my sponsor speak. And I'm kind of a weirdo. I've had the same sponsor for over 38 years. You know, I met this guy and he's still sober and I'm still sober. But they called him Killer Joe, but he was just hilarious. He was just nuts. He has this laugh that sounds like he's on acid. You know what I mean? That acid laugh, that real loud. And he'll say really inappropriate things and he'll laugh really loud. And I don't know, man. It's just crazy. But I could relate to him, you know? And he talked about taking all his money out of the bank and then going in. And, you know, putting money in the bank and taking it out the same, like, week. And I would do that all the time. Like, I'd open a bank account and then, you know, get the money out the same time or the same week. Or they close it. This is even more embarrassing. They're like, well, you only had $4, so we closed your account. And, you know, I'd feel so humiliated in line, you know, like, I can't believe you said that so loud, you know. And so, anyway, I started talking to him. And I don't know. I stayed sober, like, 6 months because I had court coming up. And I was that guy. I'd be at AA. And it'd be funny because they'd be like, how are you doing, man? You know, you got 3 months or whatever. And I'd be like, yeah, and I'm going to prison. This is stupid. Like, why am I even coming here? Like, it isn't working, you know? And, but I kept going. And then I made it 6 months. And then they offered me like a plea bargain or something. And I don't know. It was just, it was a mess. But I was just out of my mind. And my thing was like, I'm not going to prison. I'm not doing it. I'm just going to hitchhike to Colorado. I'm going to build a teepee and learn to eat squirrels or something. You know what I mean? I mean, I just thought that's what I'm going to do. I think it's a better solution. And I didn't tell my sponsor this, but that was my plan. But I started talking to him too. And then I heard some people's story where like people in AA went and talked to him. I'm like, what, where's my, you know, where's my GoFundMe kind of thing, you know? So I'm trying to hint to my sponsor about this all the time. And here's what my sponsor said to me. He goes, don't worry, Bill. They got lots of AA in prison. When you get to prison, you'll be able to go to AA. And I'm just amazed that he's still my sponsor. Why didn't I fire him back then? I must not have had any self-esteem, you know? But the guy saved my life. Like I said, with the stuff, like asking about my brother and all this stuff. But he just made everything about staying sober, you know? And it got like the day before I was supposed to go to court, and I call him. And same thing, man. I felt like he, you know, I felt like I'm drowning. And instead of him throwing me a life preserver, I felt like he threw me a cinder block, you know? He's like, well, just pray about it. and try to help other alcoholics, you know. And I'm thinking in my head, like, you don't aren't even offering to come to court with me. You suck, you know. I'm thinking in my head. And I hung up the phone with him, and then my phone rings. And it's my roommate from the treatment center I just got out of. And he's drunk and coked up, and he's in a phone booth. You can hear the traffic. And, I mean, it immediately pulled me out of myself. And I'm talking to him, and I mean, I don't know shit, but I'm like a parrot. I'm repeating things I've heard in AA meetings. I'm like, well, don't drink. Can you get to the meeting tonight? Like, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, and if I don't go to jail tomorrow, I'll meet you at this group on Thursday or whatever. And, you know, I only talked to him maybe 5 minutes, and it was so wild. I remember the anxiety I had, and I hung up the phone. I felt totally calm, and the thought in my mind was, I would rather be sober going to prison, than be him drunk in that phone booth. You know what I mean? I was like, if I have to go, I have to go. And if I stay sober, at least, you know, maybe I'll get to be a janitor or something someday. Maybe I'll have some kind of life. I mean, that was the highest hopes I had at that time, you know. And I went to court the next day. There was a blizzard. I thought maybe it would be canceled. It wasn't. And we went. And anyway, I went to jail, but I didn't go to prison. I totally lucked out. My attorney just kept saying, I can't believe you didn't go to prison. You know? He's like, you're so lucky. And he made it real clear. Like, if you get caught again, you're going to prison, you know, kind of thing. So anyway, I went to jail, got out. Hallelujah, AA works. And I'm telling everybody in AA, like, I'm sober. I went to jail. I stayed sober, you know. Well, then I got drunk like a week later. And I couldn't believe it, you know, and I felt terrible. And what it was is I wasn't taking any action. All this stuff my sponsor told me to do, I wasn't doing. You know, I would just kind of go to meetings. But I wasn't doing really, oh, and I'd go to one meeting a week. Like, I'd go to the young people's meeting, you know, and probably have a fantasy relationship with a woman that didn't happen, and then I'd get mad because I saw her talking to some other guy, you know, then I guess we broke up. So then I would just leave, and then I'd, you know, do things like this. I'd be driving to a meeting, and you know how you're supposed to pray, call your sponsor. What I do is I flip coins. I'm like, heads, you drink, tails, you don't. You look, and he'd be like, tails, don't drink, go to the meeting. I'm like, 2 out of 3. You know what I mean? And whatever, I'm going to drink no matter what happens. And then, you know, that went on for a while, but I never went for a long time. And then finally, the last time I went to the Ikipah, of all things. I went to Ikipah in 1985. It was Denver, Colorado. And I went with these kids that, I was 19. And so I was like one day sober, and they're like, stand up. And I'm like, I'm not standing up. You know, so I didn't stand up. But I got back, and I kind of stayed high off of that for like 8 months, but dry as a bone. I mean, no program whatsoever, you know. But I knew I was ready to go. I mean, I was ready to go blow up a federal building or something just to get it over with. And my sponsor worked third shift, which was a blessing for me. Because he's like, well, I'm there by myself, man. You can call me. So like, I'd see him at the meeting. I have no problems. 2 in the morning, there's smoke coming out of my ears. You know what I mean? I'm calling him up. I'm like, this person, whatever. And all he'd do is talk about AA. You know, it's so boring. He'd just be like, well, have you read the doctor's opinion? You know, have you read this? And I'd be like, dude, that book was written in like 1939. Like, there's no pictures in it. Like, you know, I need some pills to help me sleep, you know, stuff like that. And he would just talk to me about AA, and I'd go to sleep. So I started using him as a Valium. You know, I'd just call him up. He'd talk about AA. I'd go to sleep. And finally, he convinced me to start going to more than one meeting a week, and things got way better fast, you know, when I started going to more than one meeting a week. And then I'll never forget, he's like, what do you do Monday nights? I go, well, I usually go to the young people's. He goes, we go down to the state mental institution. You want to come? And I'm like, why in the hell would I want to go to the state mental institution? Anyway, I went. We go down there. They're all freaking on Thorazine. You go down there. You give them a cigarette. They smoke a whole cigarette in one hit. They smoke the whole cigarette, man. And then just call for like 5 minutes. They go, can I get another cigarette? And I'd be like, wow, you know. And he'd be there like, that's going to be you, man. That's going to be you if you don't get sober, you know. And I mean, it was crazy. And we'd go down there. We'd have to go get the patients. Then we'd go, he's like, what are you doing this Monday? He goes, why don't you meet me? He goes, we'll meet at 3 o'clock, and then we're going to drive 2 hours to London, Ohio, and then we're going to get dinner, and then we're going to go to London Penitentiary, go to a meeting. I'm like, why would I want to go to prison, man? The only reason I'm coming to AA is because I don't want to be anywhere near prison, you know? But he said, you know, keep you sober. And then, like, he's like, we're going to get home at 10 o'clock. And now I remember in my head, I'm doing math. I'm thinking, so you want to do 7 hours of AA in one day? Now, mind you, I don't work. I don't go to school. I spend 24 hours a day thinking about how much my life sucks that I'm sober in AA. So I go with him. And, I mean, it's like a 2-hour sponsorship marathon, you know, whatever, on the way up. Then we go there. Then we go into prison. I think I'm going to get murdered for an hour and a half. Then we leave, you know, and these guys would come in. They loved him, man. These guys, they were huge. You know, they had the weights in there then. They let you know they can break your hand when they shake your hand. And there's one huge guy, and he goes, "Don't he look like Magic Johnson?" I'm like, "Will you just shut up, man?" You know, and we'd have a blast, man. And I mean, I think that had so much to do with me. Because, I mean, I wouldn't ask a question. I'd be with him 7 hours. Then, like, when we're about a block from his house, I'd, like, blurt out some question, you know, like, right as we pull up. You know, and I'd be thinking about it the whole time. Because I would just, you know, be so scared or whatever. Because I was such a know-it-all. You know, anything he tried to tell me, like, "Oh, I know that, I know that, I know that." I mean, I don't know how he didn't slap the shit out of me. But, you know, he was tough, but he was good. He didn't care about my feelings. And he would always tell me the truth. I remember a lot of times it'd be funny, I'd be talking to him, I wouldn't even know it. And he'd be like, "Bill, you can explain this to me as many ways as you want. I'm not going to change my answer. You ask me, that's what I'm going to tell you, you know?" And because I'd always think, if you give me an answer, I'd be like, he just doesn't understand what I'm trying to tell him, you know? And, but I'm so grateful to have had him all these years. And so I got to be like 9 or 10 months sober, I guess. But I could feel it again, and he was like, "Why don't you do the inventory?" Because I thought I would never, I don't know about you, but the first time, where are they at? There they are. The first time I read the steps, man, I mean, I don't know about you, but my first day, I mean, I made a list of the steps I was not going to take. And I knew for sure I wasn't doing 4, no 5, definitely no 9 and 10. That sounds expensive. And, you know, I mean, 9, but, you know, but I knew, and he got me reading the big book. So I knew that, you know, invariably they got drunk. And he said, why don't you write that stuff down, you know? So I wrote the stuff down, and I mean, it was crazy. When I was finally ready to do it, I'd say it took me 20 minutes. You know what I mean? I knew this stuff made me sick every day. I would be feeling good. I remember I'd have a few months sober, working a little day labor or something. I'd catch myself in the mirror, and I'd just be smiling because I just couldn't believe I was working and sober 30 days or whatever. And I'd see my reflection. I'd be like, "You dirty bastard, what are you smiling about?" None of those people in AA would even talk to you if they knew the things you had done, you know? And so we did it. You know, we did the inventory, and when it was done, he just said, "You're just an alcoholic." You know what I mean? And it blew my mind. I couldn't believe that he was still going to be my sponsor. I thought he was going to say, "Look," because like 2 blocks down was a place called Roman Psychiatric. I was going to be like, "Look, I made a mistake. You're not an alcoholic. You should go down to Roman's and see if they can give you some electroshock therapy," you know. But, you know, he said, "You're just an alcoholic." And I don't know. I'm about out of time. What do I do today? I mean, I go to meetings. I mean, I've been sober over 38 years. I still go to 5-7 meetings a week. And I do that because I like going. You know what I mean? I like the way I feel leaving an AA meeting. The best son, employee, whatever I'm going to be is one leaving an AA meeting. I'm going to have a change of attitude when I go there. And I'm going to come into contact with people. I mean, I look around in this room and I know so many people. I remember the first time they gave a 15-minute talk. I remember the first time they went to PAR detox with me. I remember the first time I saw them go completely psycho and not drink. You know what I mean? I've seen, you know, I mean, and I've seen people, you know, I mean, it's just, I have so many, you know, just good memories. And now I see people that I've seen get sober on Zoom, and now they're sober off the internet. So that's fun too. But, yeah, I mean, I'm just, I don't know, I'm just so happy that I'm still an active member of AA. You know, lately things for me have felt the whole pandemic thing and different. I had a 20-year commitment, and they took it from me in the spirit of rotation, and I got all mad at it. So I had to go out and get me a new commitment. So I got 2 new commitments now, and it's funny, I'm already trying to back out. But I'll tell you, if you don't have a commitment, get one, whatever it is. I mean, there's so many kinds of 12-step work. So many, I wanted to talk about that real quick. So many people get so hung up on sponsoring people. And yeah, it's absolutely good, but there's so many other things you can do. You can set up the meeting. You can take down the meeting. I've seen people that have never read a step or read anything in the book, but they always make new people feel welcome. And they'll point them to people that have done this stuff. You know, so you don't know how God wants to use you. But I know the most important thing is you got to be here for it to happen. If you're not here, nothing happens. You don't get to see people pick up their 30 days, 90 days, 10 years, 20 years, whatever it is. You don't see people come back for their first meeting. I'm so happy when I'm in a meeting and I'm the only person that someone knows. You know what I mean? Like if they've been gone a long time, I might be the only person that they remember. You know, and I mean, there's times, I've had times where I've been having a hard time and I'm outside a meeting and you're thinking about it. You're like, maybe I'll go. And then you're like, nobody's really here. I should just go home. I'll go to a meeting tomorrow, whatever. And then one person pulls in, you're like, oh, I can't stand that son of a bitch. But then somebody pulls in that you like, you know what I mean? You're like, oh, well, they're there. Yeah, maybe I'll go in. You know, they're all right. They're pretty cool. You know, they gave me cigarettes one time or whatever it is. It can be the dumbest things, you know. I've hit this guy he wasn't really my sponsor, but I started telling this one guy, a counselor, just because he was like real clean cut. Then he showed me a picture where he had hair down here when he was in prison. And I was like, well, he was cool at one time, so, you know, I guess I can talk to him. But, I mean, it's so dumb, but it's like, I don't know. I'm just grateful to be here. I'm grateful you're all here. And if you're new, the main thing I would say, just give yourself a break. I mean, we hate ourselves so much. You're sick if you've had to come here. And what you got... The reason people don't do stuff when they're new, just like I didn't, we have no idea how serious it is. I thought my sponsor was out of his mind. He'd always be sitting there and he'd get real serious and be like, look around this room, more than half of these people are going to die drunk. And I'd be like, whatever, you know what I mean? And I can tell you, being here over 30 years, it's what happens. And I mean, even when you work the steps and do everything, all we have is a daily reprieve. What I did yesterday doesn't do anything for me today. You know, I have to come and get it. And every day I get down on my knees, I ask God for the knowledge of His will, not my will, His will, and the power to carry that out. And I ask Him to see, you know, what He wants me to see and to guide every thought and action I make. And, you know, no, I don't always do perfect. I mess up all kinds of ways. But, I mean, that's what our step's for. And that's what our, you know, there's a book, if you haven't read it, it's called The Spirituality of Imperfection. I highly recommend it. But it talks about a lot of that stuff. And, Get a sponsor. I don't know if I said that. That's the probably the main thing that saved my life. Just get a sponsor and let them help you, you know. And also, you'll be helping them. So, that's all. Thanks.